Welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. There's a new literary magazine based in Middle Tennessee. It's called Second in Church, and it's full of fiction and nonfiction, prose and poetry, writing, and writing about writing. Second in Church puts the spotlight on authors who clamor to get their work before a wider audience. The print version is glossy with lovely photography, and it's available in digital format as well. The website, secondinchurch.com, features exclusive online content you can't get anywhere else. The poetry editor of Second in Church is MTSU English professor Alvin Knox, who earned his bachelor's degree at Tennessee Tech and his master's degree at Vermont College. And he's a founding mentor of the MTSU program, The Writer's Loft. We'll talk about the art and craft of writing and more with Alvin Knox after these well-chosen words from MTSUnews.com.
Here are a few of the stories now on MTSUnews.com, the university's news and information website. The area around Walnut Grove was named October 6th for the two families whose property became the campus of the original Middle Tennessee State Normal School. Dignitaries witnessed the placement of three markers around the area, designating it Harrison Black Circle for Tom Harrison and Joe Black. And the MTSU Department of Art is encouraging artists to submit great things in small packages now to prepare for the launch of the Todd Art Gallery's opening exhibition for spring semester 2013. 12 by 12, a national juried exhibition of small-scale works of art, which is planned January 17th through February 14th, will serve as the fourth such exhibition of its kind at MTSU since 2006. The deadline for the discounted application fee of $30 is Monday, November 12th. All entries and fees must be received by Monday, December 3rd for consideration. For MTSU News Anytime, go to MTSUnews.com.
Alvin, welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Why is it called Second in Church?
Second in Church is an intersection in Nashville. I believe it is very close to the public library.
Well, that makes sense then. If it's close to the public library. And you have copies of Second in Church distributed in several public libraries, don't you?
I believe that there are copies in the Nashville Public Library system, yes.
With magazines of all types floundering, what is the brain trust of Second in Church doing to try to help it succeed? Why do you guys think that you can make a magazine succeed now in these times?
To some degree, it's something you've got to do. The disappearance of the print format is something that the people who are real lovers of books and lovers of reading miss a lot. And, of course, we're trying to appeal to that audience, but we've also got the website, and it is available as a digital version as well, too.
Do you personally need the tactile sensation of holding your reading material in your hand, or do you enjoy reading just as much when you do it with some kind of digital device?
I do enjoy having a book or a magazine in my hands, and I think I enjoy it more, but I don't need it like I used to. When I first started reading online, I found it very difficult, and I still do not proofread on a computer screen. Whenever I'm editing something, my own or someone else's, a paper copy is a must. Something about having the pen in hand and looking at it, being able to write on it, does a lot for concentration that I don't seem to get just running a mouse over it and changing something in that form. But as for just reading for information or for pleasure, I've gotten to the point where I can do it online.
Would you rather write your poetry longhand or on a computer?
I've done it both ways. When I first started, everything was longhand. Again, I'm a little older. You know, I'm in my 50s, and it took me a long time to adjust to the computer. I resisted computers for a long time. I didn't go back to school until I was in my 30s, and most of the kids at that point in time were using computers all the time, and I fought against it and fought against it, and finally the reality struck me that I'd better learn how to use a word processor at least. And eventually, of course, I've gotten to the point now where prose, at least, I frequently draft on the computer. You know, poetry doesn't, you don't just sit down and write a poem anyway. Right. It comes to you in little bits and flashes, and those start to play over and over in your head. And actually, I think the last poem I wrote, I did sit down and type for the first time. It was in type on a computer because I'd already written the whole thing in my head.
Do you write down ideas or just jot down notations of ideas immediately so you won't forget them and then go back later on and fuse them into a poem?
I don't think fusion is quite the right word, but I do take notes. Yeah, I don't, ideas just tend to evaporate if you don't write them down. But I'm not sure that I've ever just sort of like gone through my notebooks and said, I'm going to create a poem. Usually I'll go back through my notebooks and I'll read something I wrote a long time ago and I'll go, I wrote that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that once. And then it starts a different kind of a thought process. And then that develops into a poem or sometimes a piece of prose.
But you can be creative on a computer or an iPad. It doesn't cramp your creativity.
No, I don't believe so.
I don't think so.
And I don't own an iPad. I don't know. But on a computer, no. I can sit down and write either fiction or, you know, prose, essay, whatever it is. I can do that on the computer now.
Where does Second in Church get its content?
Oh, my. Mostly from... That's changing a little bit. Our first issue was pretty strictly based in Nashville, except for me. Our general editor, Roy Burkhead, used to be associated with the Writer's Loft program. He was actually its originator. And when he went to start Second in Church, he looked to those people he had developed relationships here, and he's still based in Nashville. So we started as sort of a Nashville, Middle Tennessee-based publication, and we've been slowly expanding. We have poets from Knoxville, Chattanooga, one from Cookeville, a couple from the Nashville area. Our feature poet in that issue is Maggie Vaughn, our Tennessee State Poet Laureate from Bellbuckle. So we branched out quite a bit there. And then in the Q3 issue, we stay kind of Tennessee, Middle Tennessee. But for our winter issue, our Q4 issue, and for 2013, we're looking to move beyond the borders of Tennessee. So,
the first issue you introduced at the Southern Festival of Books, right, in 2011?
That was about our first real public contact.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the issue itself wasn't printed. It hadn't come out. But we knew it was coming, and Roy set up a booth at the Southern Festival of Books and had, you know, bookmarks and business cards and all sorts of neat stuff to give to people before there was even a product.
And what is the poetry issue? Which issue is the poetry issue?
That would be the Q2 issue, the second quarter issue. It's not a big operation. Everybody who writes for it does graphic design, editing, proofreading. We're all volunteer.
Everybody does a little bit of everything?
Not really. I'm not sure that's quite the way to put it.
But there's sort of a division of labor going on.
There's a little division of labor. Roy's our general editor, but he also writes a couple of columns. I'm the poetry editor, but I also did a book review for Q2, and I do a little bit of public relations stuff. And then we have an interesting variety of talent. We have people that are writers. The first issue, J.T. Ellison was our cover story, and we really had no connection with her up until that point, and she did an interview where she was interviewed by Paige Crutcher, but she also turned around and interviewed River Jordan about her radio show Clear Story. So it was a very interesting, you know, people do different things for different times and different necessities of the publication. And we do it just because we do. We want to see it succeed very much.
We'll talk more about the new literary magazine Second in Church with Alvin Knox in just a moment. This is MTSU on the Record.
Women in Science and Engineering, or WISE, helps college women prepare for and become involved in science-related careers. WISE nurtures women's interest in these fascinating and critical fields and provides mentoring and networking opportunities. The group's main goal is to assure women of their importance in all scientific and technical fields and to promote equal opportunity and treatment of women in science. I'm Dr. Judith Iriarte-Gross, WISE Advisor.
For all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
Alvin Knox is our guest. He's also the poetry editor of a new literary magazine called Second in Church. There's a community of writers that, you know, communicates through their connections and word of mouth, but you're also trying very much to attract talent that maybe is not part of the group of writers that knows each other all that well, right? People you've never heard of before who've been writing and yearning for a way to get out there but just didn't know how because they're not necessarily well connected.
Yes. When you start something like this, you have to rely on the connections you've got. You need content. You need people that you can trust. But one of the first things that you also have to do, of course, is find new people, new audience, and that comes through new talent. And we do always try and, you know, we want to have some connection in terms of a name people are going to recognize, you know, to get people inside the cover. J.T. Ellison had a big book following before, you know, her appearance on Q1. Obviously, Maggie Vaughn for the poetry issue is our state poet laureate. But we also managed to find some people that, as far as we know, on very low-profile publications, to say the least. And if somebody new turned up, I mean absolutely new turned up out of the woodwork, they'd be as welcome as anyone else.
When you, as poetry editor, look at material that is submitted to you, what criteria do you take into consideration?
That's a really sort of an interesting question. There are things that I like, and there are things that I don't like, but I also recognize that I am only one perspective, one reader. And I try to have a very open mind about the sorts of things we put in, and I look for some diversity. Even if I don't really kind of like something, so to say, if it's very different, but I see it as well-crafted, if the poet has obviously sat down and thought about why the line breaks are the way they are and why they have chosen the form for the poem they have, if I can see that kind of logic and craft in a work, even if I don't necessarily, you know, if it doesn't appeal to my content-based, you know, subject-based preferences, that's not going to, you know, I'll still print that. As long as I see the craft, and again, issue to issue, I look for a little diversity, both geographic and in terms of you know, somebody may have sent me 4 or 5 poems. If I don't have to reprint a poem from someone I've already printed, I'll go for a new person every time.
Do you judge basis just on the basis of what's on the page, or do you read it out loud to see how it flows off the tongue?
Oh, I read everything out loud many times. the page is important because it's what's on the page that generates that voice in your head. But I always read everything out loud. Usually I read it several times until I feel like I'm saying it the way the poet would say it, the way that it has been meant to be presented. And sometimes I'll even go a little bit further and I'll keep saying it out loud until I don't really have to look at it anymore.
Yeah.
And then what I do is I match what I'm hearing to what's on the page. And a lot of editors these days are basically rubber stamps. I'll take this or I won't. But if I have a poem I think shows promise, but I don't think it's quite right, I'll keep communicating with that poet and explain to them why I think it needs changes and give them the option to make those changes or not. And if we can reach some sort of middle ground, or they can convince me that they're right and I'm wrong, then fine. That poem's fine.
That's a very wholesome approach, not to lose contact with that author just because one submission doesn't necessarily strike all the right chords.
Oh, yeah. No, I've seen submissions like I had a person that submitted a whole mess of prose poems, and I didn't have room, really, for a prose poem. The column format of the magazine at that point in time didn't support it, but I held on to them. And now we have changed the format a little bit. Our graphic designer, well, for the poetry issue, we had a lot of poems. We didn't have room for a great big wide sidebar at the top of a page. We needed column space to present poems. Now that we're in the planning for the third quarter issue, we're not going to print as many poets, So I have a little bit more room to put a wide sidebar in a prose poem now.
You have a terrific video for your poem, Going Home. You wrote the poem and you did the video, put the video together yourself. And I'd appreciate it if you would just read that for our listeners right now. We don't have the benefit of being able to show them the video, but it's at secondinchurch.com if anyone wants to take a look at it.
It won't be on secondinchurch.com for very long, but I'm afraid it's on YouTube forever.
Okay. Check it out at youtube.com.
Going home. It was the kind of drive my dad once dreamt of. 78 miles per hour, 900 miles per day, 2,608 miles and 57 hours and 6 minutes. Empty miles of nearly empty divided four lane in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of everywhere, in the middle of America. From the Puget Sound to Central Tennessee, and it's just me, the car, a pack of smokes, a cup of coffee, the suck and flap of rubber on blacktop that disappears and disappears and disappears under the car. A great Mobius strip of zero grid abrasive passing inches under my ass, and I'm blowing through places like Wolf Lodge and Arrow Rock, Boonville and Butte, and baby, it's all big sky country, big mountain country, big dream country, the mists of our daily existence lying broken along the roadside with skunks and dogs, rabbits, deer, indistinguishable pile of fur and bloodstains and daydreams and other pedestrian fantasies, and I'm on the downhill slide past Big Timber, Yankton, Cummings, and Loveland, all places in the rearview mirror before you even knew you were there. No sightseeing on this trip, just the place you're leaving and the place you're going and gas station restrooms and fast food meals, and my wallet's on the console and my foot's on the gas and the ghosts on the windshield melt into the sunrise, and I'm going home, baby. I'm going home.
Alvin Knox, poet and professor, our guest today on MTSU on the Record. We'll be right back.
The Concrete Industry Management Program at MTSU fills the need for trained personnel who know concrete technology and techniques. Our alumni go into the marketplace grounded in basic math and science and able to promote products or services related to the industry. Our participation in the Academic Common Market ensures talented students in other states a chance to enroll on an in-state tuition basis. This is Dr. Heather Brown, Director of the program.
To find out more information on this or other university programs, visit mtsunews.com.
We're talking about the new literary magazine, Second in Church, with Alvin Knox of MTSU. He's the poetry editor of the magazine. Also, more about it at secondinchurch.com. You mentioned that this is not going to be eventually it's not going to be a Middle Tennessee magazine or a Southern Writers magazine, but a writing magazine in which with tentacles that extend, you know, far and wide and into all kinds of branches of writing. I've asked this question before, and I'll ask it again because I get so many different answers. Some people use the word Southern writer as if Southern writing is a genre. Is it a genre, or do you, as some Southern writers do, resent the term Southern writer because it implies that all Southern writers write alike?
I don't necessarily resent the term because, I'm a transplant to the South. I've been here 20 years, mind
yeah.
you. So
well, you're one of us by now.
I think I qualify. It's true. The term Southern writer, I can see why people resent it, because it automatically says, you know, if you're from the South, you write in this very sort of storytelling mode, and many writers don't, and lots of us don't write in that. But I'm a storyteller, and I think that when people talk about Southern writers, they're really talking about an effective place and heritage that comes out of storytelling. And even our poetry tends to be narrative in nature as opposed to lyrical. And I don't mind laying claim to that heritage. It's broad and it's strong. And I think it has a kind of public appeal that the modern lyric doesn't have.
Is it because of our oral storytelling heritage, sitting out on the front porch and telling stories?
I think so. Yeah, and the kind, you know, country southern music tends to tell stories as well. You know, this is, I don't have any problem at all. If I really felt like I could lay claim to that tag of southern writer, I'd be there.
Do you consider the lyrics of a good song to be as poetic as a poem?
Absolutely. I have a pretty broad definition of what poetry is, and it reaches out to include a lot of things. Songs are a different art form than writing poems are. Some poems have choruses and verses as well, but mostly I think there's a different sort of talent involved in writing a song. Obviously, having knowledge of music is one. But they're very, very similar. The word lyric, which we use for lyric, it also applies to poetry, and it means song in its old form. And I actually give a lot of credit to things like slam poetry and...
Hip-hop?
I'm not sure hip-hop's quite there. The basis of hip-hop, of course, is you know, rap is really poetry, and it's hard to get away from that. And I don't necessarily listen to or enjoy a lot of rap and hip hop, but I can appreciate a good rap lyric when I hear it. I'm not a big fan of rhyming anything. Okay, let's get that right out.
You
right
prefer away. Free verse.
I prefer free verse. I like rhyming when it's part of a traditional form. And a lot of hip hop and rap is based on traditional form verse, but I'm not a big fan of rhyming, and I'm not a big fan of the kind of lifestyle that's portrayed in a great deal of that music. So I don't listen to much of it. But once in a while, one of my students will say, "You got to hear this song," and they're right. I did need to hear that song.
And there is nonfiction writing in Second in Church as well, right? Nonfiction prose.
There is nonfiction prose. There's some fiction prose, too. But, yeah, we all have, you know, there are magazine reviews. I'm not sure if there's a lot of creative nonfiction, like memoir, at mm-hmm. this point. Actually, that's not true, because our third issue comes right here to Murfreesboro to physicist and astronaut Ray Seddon. She's writing, she has a memoir in progress. One of our columnists is a technical writer by day and a creative writer by night, so we get that weird sort of dichotomous worldview in her columns. In the first issue, the quarter one issue, the one that's out and available for free on the website as a digital copy, there's a piece of flash fiction, also known as the short story, by Greg Plemons. I believe it's called Strawberries, and an excerpt from a novel on there. So yeah, prose is definitely part of our deal.
Yeah. We're talking with poetry editor Alvin Knox of the new literary magazine Second in Church. We'll pause one more time. This is MTSU on the Record.
Tennessee's farm families contribute to our state's economy, nutrition, and culture. The Tennessee Century Farms program at MTSU's Center for Historic Preservation acknowledges farms that have been in the same family for at least 100 years. To date, the program has certified more than 1,000 farms. This is Kenita Hankins, director of the Tennessee Century Farms program.
And for all the latest MTSU information, go to mtsunews.com.
In our remaining moments with Alvin Knox talking about Second in Church, what other MTSU connections beside Roy and yourself are there with Second in Church? Are there any other authors that you know of who have MTSU connections who are associated with the magazine or who will be writing for the magazine?
Terry Price and Charlotte Rains Dixon are Director Emeritus of the Writer's Loft Program. Terry Price's novel excerpts are appearing, plus he actually did some of the photography. We were talking earlier how people have crossover jobs. Terry writes columns, he has a novel excerpt, he's done some photography. He's just a really nice, energetic person who is willing to help out at a variety of levels. Charlotte Rains Dixon, first a mentor in the Writer's Loft, then became a co-director with Terry for a while, now resides in Portland, Oregon, but because of her ties with MTSU in Nashville, is here a lot. So she kind of writes and gives us an outsider's perspective of the Nashville writing scene, a real nice addition. I think that's Greg Clemens, whose short story, his flash fiction story I mentioned just a moment ago, was actually a student in the Writer's Loft, and he's now an award-winning writing. His writing has won an award. Wonderful short fiction writer. So he's another sort of amazing person.
Yeah.
Not many writers are really English teachers. A lot of us.
That's kind of a stereotype,
right? But a lot of writers are not English teachers, and don't even have English backgrounds.
We should, just to explain the Writer's Loft, it's a program that originated at MTSU, a not-for-credit program where writers, not necessarily college students, but people of all ages, come to hone their creative writing skills under the guidance of people who are published authors. You all are going to maintain high standards with Second in Church.
Absolutely. And actually the print-on-demand format has allowed that to some degree, because we didn't have to commit to a printer for X number of copies at X dollars per page. The print-on-demand, we can do this without a warehouse. Therefore, we could make it that good, and we could make our first issue 40 pages long. And when you get the print-on-demand version, I believe it is, $8. I think it's 50 cents a page. But that allowed us to do that. You know, if we would have had to buy 500 copies at X dollars per copy, and it made a difference how many pages there were and stuff, maybe we couldn't have done that. And we are conscious of what it costs people that want that print copy in their hands. And we do try and keep our page limit or our page numbers down to a reasonable purchase price for people that want that print edition.
But this is a labor of love, more than anything else. It's a labor of the love of writing.
That's certainly where its roots are at. Absolutely.
Now, secondinchurch.com, the website, is 2nd_church.com?
No, it is 2ndandchurch.
Okay. Forget the ampersand.
No ampersand.
Okay. www.2ndandchurch.com. Alvin Knox, thanks for being our guest today.
Thank you.
MTSU On the Record, a news and information program about Middle Tennessee State University, is produced by the university's Marketing and Communications Office, which is solely responsible for its content. Read more about MTSU at our website, mtsunews.com. Podcasts of this program are available at mtsunews.com and on iTunes.